From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. And ahoy there, my hearties, and welcome back on board my pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, and for another episode of The Captain's Table. We are safely back from escorting Andrew Cotter up to the Western Isles of Scotland, and then on through the fabled Northwest Passage through the Arctic. Bugger me, it was cold. Every other guest I've had on this wretched vessel has opted for sunnier climes, but not so Cotter. Rain, sleet, snow, you name it.
I'm the captain.
Hey, ghastly. But we're back now, and he's all set to start promoting his new book about Olive and Mabel. Talking of dogs and Labradors specifically, Bruce, the ship's dog, has become quite the menace. He is at the chewing everything phase, and he is causing havoc all over the Reeve Gauche. He has gone through all of Paul the Steward's socks, and my frock coat is frankly in tatters, as is the rigging. But he is lovely company and really does seem to enjoy life at sea. John the parrot, left us for a few days. I was worried that he would perish in the Arctic winds, but sure enough, on the fourth day, I heard his familiar squawk and he breezed back without a care in the world, and is now safely perched inside his gilded cage.
I'm the captain.
Enough of this menagerie tosh. It's time to meet the next victim to come on board the Reeve Gauche. And it's my real delight to welcome one of the UK's greatest ever tennis players, Mr. Tim Henman. His career spanned, many years from 1993 to about 2007. In that time, he reached world number four. He got to the semi-finals of all the Grand Slams apart from the Aussie Open and won a silver medal at the 1996 Olympic Games. These days, he can be seen at Wimbledon, where he serves on the very prestigious committee of the All England, or more likely, on the golf course, where many think he could have had even greater triumphs than his tennis career. I can hear his footsteps on the gangplank right now, so let's welcome him on board. Tim Henman, a very warm welcome to the captain's table. Now, pull up a chair and make yourself at home.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to see you again. And first things first is you, and well done for not tripping up on the gangplank coming in. It's a bit of a health hazard. But now that you're safely in my galley and it's a pirate ship, I should offer you a drink. Now, we do have rum on board, obviously. But as you can tell from the surroundings, this is a slightly classier ship. And we try and take the high road wherever we can. So our drink of choice on the Reeve Gauche is Loch Lomond single malt whiskey, as opposed to rum. And I can offer it to you straight, on the rocks, with soda water, or as an old fashioned.
I'd like it on a lot of rocks, please.
A lot of rocks. And do you prefer your whiskey peated or non-peated, or do you not know or care?
I don't drink whiskey, But okay. Because you're a good man, I'm prepared to make sure that you don't drink alone on your ship. So I'm the sort of the diluted version with the ice.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Paul, the steward, who's got a limp, as you can see, as he sort of, you know, he walks past you. He's going to offer you a peated and an unpeated. You can try, and we'll see what you prefer. So anyway, sit down.
I don't want to sound ungrateful, but I was thinking when you said it was a classier joint that it was going to be the Lafitte that you were going to bring out. But maybe we'll save that for next time.
Well, no, we're going to have that at dinner. So don't you worry about the wine part of things. It's all right. I've got everything sorted. So, Tim, everybody knows about your tennis career and all of that, and I don't want to talk about that. I'm much more interested in you. I've known you for many, many years. You're an enormous fan of sports. You play a lot of sports. And I just wondered what your earliest sporting memories were as a kid growing up as a fan of sport, as opposed to being a young tennis player. What were they?
Well, that's a really good question, because I'm sure that very much... you know, shaped my life, and it really centers around my family. Two older brothers who are 4 and 5 years older than me, and parents that were pretty sports mad. And you know, probably from the age of 3 or 4, I'm not quite sure when I have recollection, but certainly I have memories of playing in the garden, playing rugby, playing football, playing cricket, hockey. And then we were lucky enough to live, my parents still do, near Western Manor Hotel, and they used to have a squash court. So if anything, I played squash before I played tennis. But the reality was it was just sport at every opportunity. And my dad played decent level of sport in quite a few different games. And so used to play squash on Tuesday night. As part of a team, I used to watch that. Saturdays we used to play hockey, and Sunday we'd quite often play tennis. So my life from a very young age was full of sport, and I loved it. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way.
And did you watch on telly? Because your parents both very active sports people. Did you then watch on telly, or was it more about watching them and playing yourself?
Both. You know, when you recollect, and I guess this is showing our age, you know, the sport on television was grandstand on Saturday. It was rugby special. It was ski Sunday. The test match, if it was on, Wimbledon was obviously on the BBC. So that those opportunities sort of through terrestrial television were amazing. And you know, those my first ever. I mean, I'm not in any way musical, as you probably know, Jarlo, but my first ever cassette, so again, showing my age, was Sporting theme tunes. I just used to play, well, you know, Grandstand, you know, when the boxing was on, all those theme tunes. So I do have such fond, happy memories.
Do you remember the first sporting event that you went to where you saw a crowd and saw the whole fan thing going on? Do you remember that vividly? Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, I mean, that was tennis. I was lucky enough that my mum took me to Wimbledon first Monday in 81. So Borg had won 5 times in a row, was defending champion. And, you know, that was the first time I was lucky enough to go on centre court. I was in the crowd. And I think that's when I made my one and only career decision, really. I saw Borg walk around the corner onto centre court, and I sort of looked at it and said, you know, that's my dream. That's what I want to do when I grow up. So that's to have that experience at an early age, I think, was amazing.
And does it follow, therefore, that Bjorn Borg was your first sporting hero?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was, I think, not only the way that he played, or the way that he won, but also the way that he beat McEnroe. McEnroe was always the enemy, and they had an amazing rivalry. So he was definitely my first sporting hero. And you know, it was only a few months later that he retired. So I remember sort of thinking, and he was only 25, 26 years of age. So that was a bit disappointing. But you know, no doubt Borg was a big influence. I had the Donnet rackets, those wooden rackets that I started playing with that were part of the line that he used. So, yeah, again, I've still got a few of those.
Were there other sports, as you say? We grew up on a grandstand sort of menu of just sport after sport. Botham was coming through. There were all sorts of heroes of our generation. Were there other posters on the young Tim Henman's wall other than Bjorn Borg, or were you very much loyal to him?
Well, not so much just loyal to Borg, but loyal to tennis. Right. I was a huge sports fan, and, you know, whether it was, England rugby or cricket or football or whatever it was, I would always be watching. But, you know, there was no doubt in my mind from a very young age that, you know, tennis was the sport that I loved the most. It was the one that I was best at, and it was the one that I wanted to pursue. And that's, I still find that slightly bizarre that, you know, my kids now are 17, 15 and 12, and they've got no idea what they want to do. But, you know, literally from the age of six, I knew that I wanted to play tennis, and that is very young. But that's just the way it was.
Your tennis career subsequently, and then broadcasting and the many other things that you do within tennis, have taken you all over the world, and you're a well-traveled man. Do you like to go to live sporting events all over the world? And have there been is there a stadium? I mean, let's take Wimbledon out, because you're part of the Wimbledon furniture really now. Is there a stadium that you've been to, or an event that is just your favourite, where you've been to and the whole atmosphere has just taken your breath away?
Wow. That is a good question. I've been to my fair share of sporting events, whether that's football or rugby, a little bit of cricket. The coverage is so good on TV these days. I am quite happy to watch, listen to the coverage with a bottle of wine in hand. So I probably haven't been to as many.
Do you enjoy watching sport in that bubble of the TV and just, you know, as you say, with a bottle of red and really...
I'm to a certain extent, I'm fairly antisocial. So, you know, not having to sort of deal with, you know, lots of people and you know, just being at home on, you know, with a good group of friends, you know, we've got a nice big screen. So, you know, if there's a big match or a big tournament or a big fight on, you know, 6, 8, 10 of us sitting around a TV with some good food, good wine, is that ticks a lot of boxes for me. Going back to your original question, I remember going to the MCG for a day-nighter.
Oh, wow. Did you?
That was a pretty special atmosphere. I think, you know, the stadium is amazing. It's a huge stadium. I think the rivalry England-Australia is sort of historic. And there's, you know, good banter there. I've always enjoyed playing in Australia, competing against Australians. And you know, that sporting rivalry goes back a long time. So MCG was good. The one that I haven't been to, I've been to Augusta, but I've never been to the Masters during the tournament. So that is, that's definitely...
on the list.
On the hit list, yeah.
Fantastic. And when you played your tennis, you know, I know you were sort of taught to keep your emotions in check, and that probably served you very well during your career. As a fan of sport, if you go to, say, an England rugby international, whatever it may be, have you ever cried? Have you ever been so moved by sport that you've shed a tear? Not playing, but watching.
Certainly by my own performances, I've shed many tears. But have I shed tears? Watching Federer, play some of his best tennis, and sometimes when he wins or loses, he gets pretty emotional. So I think that's been fairly emotional to watch at times. I don't think another sport performance has sort of moved me to tears. But that's not to say that I don't enjoy and appreciate, when you're watching epic matches.
We'll take you to a Welsh rugby match. But on that note, just imagine I take you down to the Principality Stadium to watch my beloved Wales play against England, and you're my guest, and we're going to go to the rugby, and that's great. And I decide at halftime, I'm a bit peckish, as you know, and I know you're a man of refinement. You're used to sort of a three-course Wimbledon lunch, but I'm taking you to Cardiff, and we're going to nip down at halftime. There are burger vans. There's all sorts of vans serving your average fan food. What is your sin food? What is Tim Henman, when no one's watching, just snack into?
Oh, I mean, in that, a big dirty burger. It ticks all the boxes. Do you know, we're obviously in lockdown at the moment, and within our village, we live outside Oxford, and there's the pub's obviously closed down, and the chef who runs the pub has just had a baby, him and his wife, and so they're a bit busy. But there's another chef in the village, and he sort of started up after 5 or 6 weeks, you know, doing a Saturday night menu for the village to say, put in your order, and we'll deliver it. And he is doing the best burgers that I've had in a long time. So again, you know, some of these weeks it's a bit Groundhog Day, isn't it? When it's more of the same, and but for me, Saturday night is burger night, and he does these sort of triple—they're called these triple-cooked chips. So they're fat and they're crispy with a big burger. I'll add on, you know, a bit of bacon and cheese.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Then I mean, the world is a better place.
Well, I never knew that about you. I'm going to have to come down and see you. Loch Lomond, who I know you're sort of sipping tentatively at that whiskey, they are the spirit of the Open Golf Championship, which you probably know. And it's quite well documented, and I know better than most, that you're quite keen on golf. And I know that you've been to an Open Championship many times to watch and to work with HSBC. What Open venue is your favourite to play?
Can I just start off with Loch Lomond?
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to go to Loch Lomond to play the course probably in the last 5 years. And, you know, I'm a golf addict, and I've been lucky enough to play, you know, a lot of good courses around the world. And Loch Lomond, we got a nice day, and it was brilliant. It's in my top eight worldwide.
Is that right?
I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was just. But then you throw in the whole atmosphere and the staff and the locker room and how well they look after you, the burger and the beer. It was absolutely fantastic. So Loch Lomond gets two thumbs up from me.
Well, that's fun.
Open venue. I mean, my favourite course. On the open rota is probably Birkdale. But I think favorite venue is going to be St. Andrews. I think the history, tradition and everything goes with it. An open championship there. When you hear the pros talk about competing at St. Andrews in the open championships, I think that has to be the ultimate. So yeah, but it's been a lot of fun to have visited those Open Championship courses, and there's some pretty special ones.
And you've until this lockdown, you've probably played more rounds of golf than most professionals in the last decade. What would be your dream pro-am team, or not even pro-am team, if you have a four ball and you're captain, anyone in the world, you know, living or dead, and doesn't have to be a professional golfer, could be family, who would your four ball be?
Wow, that is a good question. I would go with, I'm going to go golfers. You know, I can play with hackers plenty of times.
I thought I was in with a shot then.
So if I'm playing golf, I'm going to go with pro golfers. I would go with Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, and I'm going to go with, I mean, there's a few. I've played a lot with Tom. Well, not a lot, but I played a bit with Tommy Fleetwood, who's been great value. Justin Rose. I'll go for Justin Rose.
Okay. That's not a bad four ball. And where would he play? Any course?
Any course. I think I might make it a home game. I'm lucky enough to be a member at Sunningdale. And yeah, Sunningdale on a day like today, it's pretty tough to beat. So Sunningdale, Old or Augusta if we're in America.
Okay, I think probably can get that sorted. I have no influence anymore, but maybe, you never know. Well, just going a few questions about your tennis career. I'm interested, when you started out, you know, and there's this big circus, professional tennis, you're a young boy, and it's all hugely daunting. Was there any players that you sort of started out when you met them that you weren't particularly sure about? at the start of your career and by the end of it had become firm friends. Are there sort of any stories where it's sort of started off going, oh, not sure about him or her, and then over the course that people gone, oh, they really grew on me?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly because tennis is such a global game, there it's very easy for there to be a language barrier. And, you know, if you've got South Americans or Europeans speaking French or Spanish or whatever it may be, you might not be able to communicate. And you know, he might look at you and you might look at him and think, well, he looks a bit of a knob and I'm not going to talk to him. But, you know, I can't necessarily say I've contributed to too many other languages that I speak. But, no, I haven't got to know, you know, many players over the years. You know, I think when I first came onto the tour, Becker, Boris was at the top of the game and was such a, you know, huge star. And I remember playing him in Munich, actually, in the Grand Slam Cup. And you know, it was in front of 12,000 in Munich, and the atmosphere was incredible. But I'm not sure he ever looked at me in any stage in that. Definitely not before the match, and I think he might have glanced at me when we shook hands. But I remember sort of thinking, you know, and I was young, I was, you know, 20, 21, and Boris was, you know, top of the world. So why should he, you know, why should he speak to me? But he's someone that, you know, to begin with, I'm not sure I would have given him, you know, much sort of day. But as I did, probably as I got better and he had a bit more respect for me, and then I got to know him, and then obviously working in the media, you know, he's someone that, someone whose company I enjoy enormously. If you'd have asked me that 25 years ago, I would have probably put quite a big question mark next to it.
And Tim, who is the most gifted player of your generation that perhaps didn't hit the big time, but you thought had the most outrageous talent that couldn't maybe quite convert it into titles? Was there anybody who was just...
I mean, when you talk about sort of the natural talent, the shot making, I mean, you know, Fabrice Santoro, the French guy who was double-handed both sides, you know, unbelievably gifted. And had a lot of, you know, a lot of success, won tournaments, but he was a guy who had enormous natural talent. There was a Moroccan guy, Hisham Arazi, who was, I think, a year older than me, lefty, you know, massive, massive gift, but not always that consistent mentality. So those are a couple. But again, you know there are talents in different forms. You know, Rafa Nadal's mental, you know, talent, his fortitude, his application, his desire to compete for point after point is a massive talent, and he's worked very hard at that. But I think, you know, when you ask the question, it's much more about the, you know, the God-given talent of your hand skills. So, but you know, the best player I ever played against was Federer, and he's the most naturally gifted, you know, player I've ever seen. But also, you know, he works incredibly hard at all the other aspects.
And you mentioned the Masters earlier as a tournament, golf tournament you'd like to go to. Are there any other sporting events on your bucket list that you've not been to that you'd love to go to once in any sport?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I'd like to go to a Boxing Day test in at the MCG. I'd like to go to the... I'm not a petrol head, but I'd like to go to Monaco Grand Prix. Probably watch from a, you know, big yacht.
Well, how about this one? This one should do.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not sure they let pirate ships into Monaco Harbor.
With your influence, we've got a shot.
Now you're talking. I mean, the Masters definitely. Football, I can
take or leave.
Some of the rugby I've been to Twickenham and watched, and I'd like to watch England in the World Cup final, you know, preferably at Twickenham, preferably beating the All Blacks, but that might be somewhat
you're not alone there
to organise.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And are there any sporting heroes that you've either met that have sort of, you've just gone, I can't believe I've had the privilege to meet that person, or someone who you never got the chance to meet that is just the ultimate that you would love to have shaken hands with once?
I'd have very much liked to have met Fred Perry. You know, he's he's an iconic figure in tennis and you know, certainly British tennis. And I never really got to meet him when I was younger, and then he sadly passed away. I've enjoyed meeting, you know, I've met my heroes in tennis, certainly Bjorn Borg being that person. I've enjoyed meeting the legends of golf. I never met Arnold Palmer. I'd like to have met Arnold Palmer. I've met Jack Nicklaus.
And you have a great rapport with, I mean, it's well known for your BBC work. You have a great rapport with McEnroe. And it's interesting that you saw him all those years ago when you were 6, 7 years old, and you've become firm friends. So that's become that's a sort of full circle, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I think John would probably, agree that he's probably another one. When he came on the circuit as a 17, 18-year-old brash American, I think a lot of people, probably gave him a wide berth. But, I didn't really compete against him and then have got to know him over the last 20 years, sometimes playing on the Champions Tours, more in broadcast. And he's great value. He's a student of the game. He's passionate about the game, and he's got a brilliant insight. So he's got a great sense of humour. So he's someone that I've really enjoyed spending a lot of time with.
Okay, and we now come to a part of the show which I call the Captain's Broadside, where I'm going to ask you a series of fairly random questions, but you'll probably like them because they involve food and drink. You've come aboard my ship, the Reeve Gauche, and as befits a sailing boat, we can go wherever in the world you would like to go. So, what's your chosen destination? Where can I drop you off?
It's not difficult for me. You can drop me off in Mustique.
Okay, great. Well, that will be 3 weeks. Here we are we've got to get to the Thames, so we'll get down sort of through Essex and then down.
There's no rush. We've got plenty of time.
We've got a lot of wine. We'll come back to that. And you're a guest at this beautiful oak table, old English oak table, and we're going to feed you very well for the next 3 or 4 weeks, or however long it takes. But you get to choose the first supper tonight, and I throw in the cheese course, as is my tradition. But the Tim Henman 3-course dinner, and then we can talk a little bit about the wine to go with it, because you like a pairing suggestion, I know. What is the Tim Henman 3-course dinner?
I think I'm going to go for a sort of surf and turf combo. I'm a big sushi fan, so I think I'm going to start off with a sort of sushi and sashimi platter.
Nice.
You can have a bit of everything on, but I'm a big fan. And
okay, and what? So you're going to have the wine? Do you want to pair the wine with that now? I think we should. What would your white be with that?
I'm going to have a. Well, we probably might have had a glass of champagne just to start the sail off. But with the sushi and sashimi, a nice white burgundy of some sort, whatever you've got hidden in the ship, in the cellar. But nice.
Okay.
More ration.
Yeah, that's good. And then the main course?
The main course, I am going to go for...
Not the village dirty burger.
I'm going slightly more refined. It's probably going to be a fillet of beef. Would we share a Chateaubriand or something?
I'm not very good at sharing, as you know. I'm built for comfort, not speed. No.
Okay, well, I'll go for a fillet of beef, served medium rare, with a few vegetables and some of the chef in the village is triple cooked chips.
Okay, he'll be very pleased. What's his name? Does he have a name?
His name is Olivier
from Oxfordshire. Okay, well, we'll try and bring him on, see if he'll sail with us. And what's your red? I'm interested, actually. You love your reds.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have to go for a Chateau Lafite, I think.
Okay. Well, we've fortunately just taken a whole consignment of Chateau Lafite, so we'll be fine.
Just magnums, no single bottles.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's your pud? What's the pud? Vital, what's...
Anyway, in lockdown, I've been doing quite well on puds, and really, really simple, not getting creative, but we're doing some research on, you know, Ben and Jerry's ice cream, Haagen-Dazs ice cream, trying a few different flavors. My daughters are keeping me up to speed with the good ones. So we've got cookies and cream, cookie dough, dolce leche, strawberry cheesecake.
Oh, my word.
So fish foods one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Surprisingly good. Surprisingly good. So I'm going to have...
A bit of each?
A scoop of each.
Nice. Okay, well, that's very good. And as you're my guest of honour on the Reef Gauche, and we're going to be sailing down to Mustique, I've given you a decent cabin. And rather weirdly for a 18th century pirate ship, it has a power shower in it. And I've already alluded to the fact that you're not much of a musician, but, you know, you're going to obviously, I hope, get yourself tidied up a bit before dinner. You're in the shower. What does Tim Henman sing in the shower?
So I'm going to go to my Sonos playlist, care of my children, and they put together a it's more for if I'm running and stuff, and as usual it won't come up now. Unable to fix connected.
Is this their music or your music?
No, it's my music, but they've done the playlist, so it's a real mixture. I've got some, you know, Coldplay, bit of Ed Sheeran, got a couple of Neil Diamonds on there.
Oh, nice. This is all my playlist on the piano. This should be fun.
bit of Sweet Caroline.
Oh, come on.
Oh God, now you're asking. Pressure's on.
Don't worry. I think Sweet Caroline.
Bit of Robbie Williams. There's,
Bloody hell, you're going to have quite a long shower at this rate.
Yeah, but we, you know.
We got time.
What else is there? There's a bit of, maybe there's some Oasis on there. It's a mixture, but it's a good, but it's quite a long, yeah, it's a.
Your daughters have clearly got very good taste. They've put together a fairly decent, we may have to put this over dinner, actually. And you mentioned your cassette of BBC Sporting theme tunes. Do you remember your first album? Because I think you and I were just at the sort of cassette album time. What?
I'll tell you a big moment in time, and it was 19, I'd say it was March 1994, and I was playing, I was ranked about 200 and around 200 in the world, and I was playing, doing a series of tournaments in Asia. I was away for about 6-7 weeks, so I was 19. I was coming up 20 that year, and the first tournament I was playing in was qualifying for Tokyo Indoor. And Tokyo Indoor, in back in the day, it was a sort of $1 million tournament, and they always hosted it amazingly well. It was one of the first stadiums anywhere that had a sliding roof. And anyway, I was there for qualifying. I flew out there on my own and got out there a few days before the tournament, and you know, it wasn't necessarily that straightforward. Got into qualifying, and then I won 3 rounds qualifying to get into the main draw. And with their technology in Japan, they were sort of seemed like they were years ahead of the rest of the world. And every night you would get a gift in your hotel room. And the first night I got a Sony Discman.
Wow.
And this, I mean, it was off the charts. I mean, I could not believe it.
That is outstanding.
Then, so I got this Discman, and I just thought it was the coolest thing, you know, your portable Discman, but I had no CDs. And so I went out and I bought 2 CDs. And the first one I bought was REM.
Yeah.
And the other one I bought, which I thought was really cool, and I found it the other day, and it was Counting Crows.
Wow. So that, yeah. So you must have played those 2 over and over again.
Jeez, I was away for 7 weeks. And then that week in Tokyo, I qualified and made 3rd round. And I had to play Sampras in the 3rd round, who was number 1 in the world. You know, I was 201 in the world. And I lost 6-1, 6-2, and I was pretty lucky to get those three games. But I got a check for $13,000, and I could not believe it. I just thought I've won the lottery here. It was probably
right
10 times the size of a check that I'd ever had before. So, and that was a big,
big moment. And that probably leads on to the next question is, because you probably could then afford it. Do you remember what your first car was? Your first car that you...
Absolutely. I'll tell you where I bought it. Chiswick Roundabout.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah. By the M4.
Yeah. And the Peugeot garage that is no longer there. which must have been about that. Probably just a bit before that. Bit before I was in Tokyo, I went in and bought a brand new Peugeot 306 XSI.
What colour?
This thing was cool. It was a blue, sort of metallic blue.
Nice. And you chose that? You bought it? You chose it? This was your...
Went in, smashed the cap.
And you loved it very much, I suspect.
It was off and running. I mean, your own car. I mean, it was just...
And tell me, Tim, one of the final questions is, you're known to be a good golfer, and you really are. Do you have any other sort of hidden talents that you've got that you're quite good at that people might not know about? You're not musical. You've attested to that. And I can attest to that. You're not. Anything
else? Not as good as you.
Yeah, that's not saying a lot.
I'm getting quite good at drinking wine.
Oh, that's good. Well, you're on the right ship then. No, well, then we'll keep going on.
I'd say, you know, my passions, have been tennis and sport. But certainly, you know, wine is up there. Another passion, this is probably a bit strange for some people. I'm a bit of a pyromaniac. I love fires.
What, bonfires and barbecues and all that sort of stuff?
Barbecues, and we've got a few big open fires at home, so you know, in winter, in spring, in summer, you don't need to encourage me to light the fire.
Well, I will ask you just to be a little bit careful. This isn't all timber ship. The frame is timber; it's old oak, and it could go up, particularly with it's a bit of a powder keg for obvious reason. Tim, we're going to sail on to Mustique very shortly. We're just pulling the ropes in now, and we're going to set sail. But before we do, if we could smuggle, being this is a pirate ship, your most treasured possession. That we can look after, put in a chest, and then obviously, as pirates do, we bury the chest to make sure that it's safe and we have a map so it can be found again. Do you have anything in your kind of world that you just would want to make sure is safe forever? Is there a treasured possession, something that takes you to a place, or are you not less of a material person?
Family first and foremost, the most important bit, but you're hopefully not going to bury them in the ground.
No, that's too harsh.
Nothing springs to mind.
None of those Donne rackets, not your golf clubs, nothing like that?
They're very replaceable. I've got an 18-litre bottle of Chateau.
Please can we bring that?
Quite heavy, but no, I'm not. You know, I've trophies or medals, I'm not the type of person that's got them on display or nothing really.
Nothing springs to mind. No, it's interesting. Some people do and some don't. No, it's very interesting. Now, Tim, I could go on for ages chatting with you, but we've got weeks at sea and you need to check into your cabin and get yourself ready, have that shower, sing Sweet Caroline maybe and get ready for dinner. You've been a wonderful, wonderful guest, and it's a real joy having you on board the Reeve Gauche and at the captain's table. And as mentioned, because this is a classy pirate ship and rum is not particularly encouraged, the guys at Loch Lomond Whiskies would like to send you a 12-year-old bottle of malt whiskey as a little gift for you for coming on the show. So that will be coming to Oxfordshire fairly shortly. And it only goes to say thank you very much for coming on board and looking forward to sailing down to Mustique.
Thanks, Charlo. Absolute pleasure.
Thanks, buddy.
Gosh, how brilliant to have Tim join us for that half an hour or so. He really is fabulous company. And his wine cellar is one of the best in the business.
so we may spend some time in Mustique, draining mine and ordering more with his knowledge. For all our listeners, we are so grateful for your support of the show. And so we don't want you to leave with your cellars empty either. And so our very kind friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies are very kindly and once again giving away a bottle of 12-year-old single malt whisky. This time, we're going to go with the Inchmurrin, which is a really scrummy drop with tastes of grass and pear drops, creme caramel and fudge, so they tell me. I like it with a couple of cubes of ice and a dash of water, and down it goes. To be in with a chance of winning this bottle, head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malt and follow their instructions to enter. Coming up on the next show, we have one of England's finest ever golfers, Dame Laura Davis. With 87 professional wins over a career that started in 1985, Laura is not just a brilliant golfer, but she is without doubt the most fun pro-am partner anywhere in golf.
I'm the captain.
Like Thomas Bjorn, she is also a mad keen Liverpool fan and a very handy cricketer. I can't wait to have her on board. From all my colleagues at Are You Not Entertained and Loch Lomond Whiskies, thank you for your support for the shows we make. We're really, really grateful for your time. And if you do get a chance, please tell your friends about us, the show, and get them to find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podfix by searching Are You Not Entertained? If you want to follow me or get in touch, you can do so on Twitter at GilesMorgan71 or via email at giles@gilesdmorgan.com. So until we meet again with Dame Laura Davis, remember to keep your sails folded, your rudder straight, and do steer clear of icebergs. Goodbye.